Several countries express concern over what they say is the incomplete data gathered by the World Health Organization on the origins of the pandemic. A top government official admitting the possibility pandemic financial aid could find its way to next year's national elections. More local officials ordered to explain why they prioritize themselves in the vaccination line. And U.S. President Joe Biden acts on the growing number of cases of Asian hate crimes in America. Hi, I'm Carmina Constantino. Dateline Philippines begins right now. Hi, thanks for joining us. And for those of you watching us on YouTube and on Facebook, glad you could join us today. The U.S. and over a dozen other countries slammed the World Health Organization's newly released report on the origins of the novel coronavirus. They cite the report's lack of data or lack of complete data, which the WHO is pinning on China. Here's the full story.
World Health Organization investigators spent 4 weeks earlier this year in and around Wuhan, China, to research the origins of the COVID-19 pandemic. But in remarks about the final reports, the WHO's director general said China withheld data from investigators. The United States and 13 other countries on Tuesday promptly expressed concerns that the report was delayed and lacked access to complete data.
The report lacks crucial data, information.
White House Press Secretary Jen Psaki on Tuesday faulted China for not offering independent experts unfettered access.
Well, they have not been transparent. They have not provided underlying data. That certainly doesn't qualify as cooperation. The analysis performed to date from our experts, their concern is that there isn't additional support for one hypothesis. It doesn't lead us to any closer of an understanding or greater knowledge than we had 6 to 9 months ago about the origin. It also doesn't provide us guidelines or recommended steps on how we should prevent this from happening in the future. And those are imperative.
The WHO report said the virus had probably been transmitted from bats to humans through another animal, and that a lab leak was extremely unlikely as a cause.
There are areas where we had difficulties getting down to the raw data.
WHO's mission leader, Peter Ben-Emberick, told reporters that second-phase studies were needed. He said the team felt political pressure, including from outside China, but that he was never pressed to remove anything from its final reports.
In China, like in many other countries, there are restrictions on privacy laws that forbid the sharing of data, including private details to outsiders, in particular if the data are moving out of the country.
And Barrick also told reporters it was perfectly possible the virus had been circulating in November or October of 2019 around Wuhan, potentially spreading to other countries earlier than what has been documented so far.
The World Health Organization and the leaders of 23 countries support an idea to create an international treaty that would help the world deal with future health emergencies like the COVID-19 pandemic now ravaging the globe. More in this report.
Leaders of 23 countries and the World Health Organization have pledged support for an international treaty to help deal with future health emergencies like the coronavirus pandemic, with the United States and China reacting positively to the proposal. The president of the European Council, Charles Michel, told media on Tuesday that future pandemics will require a global approach and a collective commitment at the highest political level. Better alert systems, data sharing, and research would be the main goals of the treaty, as well as the production and distribution of vaccines, medicines, diagnostics, and personal protective equipment. The announcement comes on the same day that several Asian countries were left scrambling to find alternative sources for COVID-19 inoculations. That's after export restrictions by the world's largest vaccine manufacturer, India, left the WHO-backed COVAX program short of supplies. India put a temporary hold on exports of AstraZeneca's vaccine being produced by the Serum Institute, which was due to supply 90 million doses to COVAX over March and April, as officials focus on meeting rising domestic demand. The move has alarmed many countries, mainly in Africa and Asia. India's decision is the latest in a series of setbacks for the COVAX facility, relied on by 64 poorer countries, after production glitches and a lack of funding from wealthy nations.
Germany will restrict the use of AstraZeneca's COVID-19 vaccine to people ages 60 and above. An independent vaccine committee recommended the move in response to reports of a rare brain blood disorder being linked to the jab. Germany's health minister says there were 31 reported cases of thrombosis as of March 29, 9 of them fatal. But the World Health Organization has found no solid proof of increased risk of blood clotting conditions among those who receive the jab. Instead, the WHO highlights the vaccine's potential to prevent COVID-19 and reduce deaths. The Philippine government set to build field hospitals to accommodate the surge in COVID-19 patient admissions. Treatment Chief Leopoldo Vega says these field or modular hospitals can be built in 45 days. Vega says they are working to expand the capacity of the One Hospital Command Center, which monitors hospital occupancy and facilitates the referral of coronavirus patients.
Now we are receiving almost 400 calls per day. And it's kind of overwhelms also the number of agents that are going to refer patients to the different hospitals. So this is one of the weaknesses that we have, and we are seeking the understanding and the patience of the public because we're trying to improve our command center so we can best respond and serve the public better.
This comes as the Okta Research Group expects hospitals to remain full in the coming weeks.
It will be full for a while kasi hindi yan bababa agad yung numbers. We could have this situation for maybe 2 or 3 more weeks at the least. Na yung mga hospitals ay puno. Hindi tayo nagsusugarcoat. I mean, I wish I could give you a better outlook.
The son of the late Filipino music icon Claire De La Fuente reveals the struggle they went through to get treatment for COVID-19. De La Fuente's son, Gigo, said they had to wait for 2 nights to get an available hospital bed for his mother. Prior to testing positive for COVID-19, De La Fuente was also dealing with anxiety, diabetes, and hypertension. Gigo says he, too, is COVID positive, but he remains asymptomatic.
My mom is... Until the end, she didn't say anything. She did, however, fear death before she left the house. And I should have taken it as a sign when she called me and, "Anak, samahan mo ko dito sa kwarto. Kailangan ko ng kasama." In a way, I guess she was slowly.
Estrada is set to turn 84 on April 19. The Philippines logs more than 9,000 new COVID-19 cases for the fifth straight day. This brings the number of active cases in the country to over 124,000. That's the highest in Southeast Asia. Data from the health department revealed nearly 57,000 new cases have been recorded in just 6 days, surpassing the monthly totals from November 2020 to February 2021. The death toll, meanwhile, reached 13,191, while recoveries have soared past 603,000. Worldwide, COVID-19 cases have breached the 128 million mark, while the global death toll stands at 2.8 million. The provincial government of Laguna already planning for a possible extension of the enhanced community quarantine imposed within the so-called NCR Plus bubble. Governor Ramil Hernandez says they may divert funds from their current projects to give aid to affected residents. That's as Hernandez notes, they have yet to receive the funds for the national government's cash assistance.
Tulong-tulong po, bukod po sa matatanggap nating assistance sa national, gagawin din po namin ang aming makakaya sa lokal, sa probinsya, para makapagbigay po ng tulong sa mga tao.
The ECQ implemented in the NCR and nearby provinces is set to expire on April 4, but there is talk it could be extended. More local officials ordered to explain why they jumped the COVID-19 vaccination line. The Interior Department says the number of those given a show cause order has already risen to 13. Of this total, 11 are mayors, one is a governor, and another a councillor. Interior Undersecretary Epemakoden Singh III says only Mayor Noel Rosal Legazpi of Legazpi City in Albay has responded to the show cause order. Denzing warns the department may issue more show cause orders.
Meron pa po kaming nare-receive ngayon na mga reports and pictures na nagpabakuna ng mga lokal na opisyales. Ina-evaluate lang namin kasi may kasamang mga kapitan.
The special advisor of the country's COVID-19 task force refusing to acknowledge the Philippine Hospital Association's concern. Hospitals in Metro Manila are close to their breaking point. Dr. Ted Herbosa says the healthcare situation in the country should be considered a period of surge and not a collapse, since hospitals are still operating. While he recognizes that medical facilities in Metro Manila are operating at over capacity, he insists patients are still able to find hospitals in other provinces. Various sectors are urging the Philippine government to ramp up mass testing and hospital readiness as more Filipinos die due to a lack of facilities to treat COVID-19 patients. Adrian Ayalin filed this report.
Three buses of the Office of the Vice President and its partners from the private sector and other government agencies went around Malabon City to provide free COVID-19 antigen testing. Called swab cabs, the project was rolled out Tuesday after Vice President Lenny Robredo called for a wider targeted testing, as Metro Manila, Rizal, Laguna, Bulacan, and Cavite have been placed under enhanced community quarantine. 419 swab tests were conducted and 24 tested positive. The Department of Health, meantime, assures the public COVID-19 testing is one of the priorities of the national government to combat the spread of the coronavirus.
We should be targeting 100,000 tests per day, and that is the objective. As I've said, we are adding the rapid antigen test in our methodology so that we will be able to reach that target.
While most hospitals are in full capacity, there is also a call for immediate government attention to private and public hospitals which have no choice but to refuse severe COVID-19 cases. Angelo Barrera posted on Twitter his family's ordeal after going through several hospitals for his father over the weekend, who had been suffering from a severe COVID-19 case. Angelo's father died next to the door of an emergency room and was not admitted to the intensive care unit.
I just hope that for other people's sakes in the future, that the government has a clear plan of action talaga with combating the pandemic, because it's getting worse. It's even worse than when everything started, because now there are variants. It's hard to pinpoint an exact vaccine that will work. So waiting around for a vaccine is no longer an option at this point, because there are so many people suffering.
Angelo's post was doubted by some on Twitter, but a doctor confirmed his post. Dr. Anna Victorino also called on the public to hold the government accountable for the rising deaths due to COVID-19. For displaced workers in Tumana, Marikina City, the national government must also intensify its efforts to provide them assistance, as there is no sign that the virus is slowing down. Non-government organizations are also providing assistance to the residents through a soup kitchen.
Kulang at kulang pa rin po yan. Tulad po namin, ako isang katulong po ako. Eh ngayon, wala akong trabaho. Dahil siyempre, nag-iingat din ang mga amo ko. Hanggang kailan ho, hindi ho natin alam kung hanggang kailan.
Kailangan ng mga gantong parallel efforts from the people, kasi we cannot just complain. We have to do something so that people will know that it's not enough.
Adrian Ayalin, ABS-CBN News.
The World Health Organization's representative to the Philippines warning against the use of ivermectin on humans as treatment for COVID-19. During Tuesday's House hearing on the country's pandemic response, Dr. Rabindra Abiasinghe said there is not enough data to prove the efficacy of the anti-parasitic drug, which is commonly used on animals.
The issue with ivermectin is that based on that initial study and the currently available data, it is not strong enough for us to advocate the use of ivermectin for treatment of COVID or prevention of COVID.
In other news, U.S. President Joe Biden takes additional steps to address crimes against Asian Americans hours after a man assaulted a 65-year-old Filipino-American who was walking to church in New York. Let's get the latest now from our North America correspondent, Don Tagala. He joins us now. Don, good afternoon from Manila.
Carmina, New Yorkers, including city and elected officials, came together on Tuesday to stand in solidarity with Vilma Perry, a 65-year-old Filipino-American woman who was brutally beaten in Hell's Kitchen on Monday. U.S. Congressman Jerry Nadler said this has got to stop and that bystanders cannot just stand there and do nothing. They need to at least call the police or assist the victims. A security camera captured the brutal attack of the Filipina who was on her way to church on Monday. The unknown assailant kicked Vilma Carey so hard in the stomach, she fell to the ground. He then kicked her in the head three more times before leaving her seriously injured. The New York police reported that the unknown attacker yelled obscenity at the elderly Pinay and told her, "You don't belong here." There were three men seen at the lobby of the apartment building, the luxury apartment building, just seemingly watching her get violently assaulted and did nothing. A security guard even closed the glass door on her as she was trying to get up. She suffered a contusion and a broken pelvis, but is out of danger and is expected to recover. President Joe Biden tweeted, "We can't be silent in the face of rising violence against Asian Americans, and the president is taking additional steps to respond, including establishing an initiative at the U.S. Department of Justice to address anti-Asian crimes." He said, "These attacks are wrong, un-American, and must stop." Carmina?
Yes, Don. So how was the woman able to get help that she badly needed at that time, considering that the door was locked on her, the three men didn't even bother to help her, Don?
There was another stranger who was walking past by the luxury apartment building who, you know, came up to her and actually helped her and called 911 probably like a few minutes after what happened. It's just that those people inside the building, you know, they were the ones who did nothing, Carmina. Mm.
And how is this affecting the Filipino community there in New York? We know that it's a tight-knit community there. Did this strike fear in the hearts of the, you know, members of the Filipino community? What are they going to do about it?
Yeah, aside from really getting angry, because I spoke to a lot of our kababayans earlier, that they were angry about what happened to Vilma Carey, they are actually afraid to get out and, you know, take the subway or walk down the streets. They feel that, you know, they shouldn't be out on the streets, and because it's not safe anymore, they are asking the government to field in more police. I think they believe that police presence could somehow help this situation, Carmina.
Mm-hmm. And finally, let's talk about the kids and how this is affecting them as well. Are there parents now who are afraid to let their kids go out?
There are parents who are actually not sending their children to school. They'd rather have them, you know, go online and do virtual classes than be on the streets unsafe on the streets of New York, on subway. So, you know, I mean, as long as this is still happening, a lot of Filipino Americans would not be, you know, would not be able to send their children to school safely and confidently, Carmina.
All right, we're going to have to leave it at that, and we will continue to follow this story, the rise of Asian American hate crimes there all over in the United States. Don Tagala there, a correspondent from North America. Thanks, Don, and you keep safe. Back here in the newsroom, the Minneapolis teenager whose cell phone video of Derek Chauvin's deadly arrest of George Floyd sparked a worldwide protest wept on the witness stand as she described what she saw that day. More in this report.
Would you tell the ladies and gentlemen how you're viewing, experiencing what happened to George Floyd has affected your life?
Day two of the murder trial of ex-Minneapolis cop Derek Chauvin brought emotional testimony from at least two eyewitnesses to Chauvin's deadly arrest of George Floyd last May. Darnella Frazier, the teenage girl whose cell phone video of the incident was seen around the world, cried when recalling that day, her face kept off camera due to her young age.
When I look at George Floyd, I look at my dad. I look at my brothers, I look at my cousins, my uncles, because they are all black, and I look at that and I look at how that could have been one of them. It's been nights. I stayed up apologizing and apologizing to George Floyd for not doing more and not physically interacting and not saving his life, but it's like, it's not what I should have done. It's what he should have done.
With that, she turned to Chauvin, whose lawyers began to object to her response. Frazier was walking her 9-year-old cousin to buy snacks at a small grocery, where moments earlier a worker had accused Floyd of using a fake $20 bill, when she said she saw Chauvin with his knee on Floyd's neck.
I heard George Floyd saying, "I can't breathe, please get off of me. I can't breathe." He cried for his mom. He was in pain. It seemed like he knew. It seemed like he knew it was over for him.
Another witness, professional mixed martial arts fighter Donald Williams, who can be heard on Frazier's video hurling insults at police as he demanded they check Floyd's pulse, described on the stand why he called 911 after Floyd's arrest.
At some point, did you make a 911 call?
That is correct. Did call the police on the police.
Right. And why did you do that?
Because I believe I witnessed a murder.
He then dabbed his eyes with a tissue as a recording of that call was played back in the courtroom.
He told them to check the man's pulse, but they wouldn't even check the pulse.
Chauvin's lawyers have sought to convince the jury that Chauvin may have felt threatened by bystanders. They say he followed his police training and is not guilty of the charges brought by the Minnesota Attorney General's office of second-degree murder, third-degree murder, or second-degree manslaughter.
Would you tell the ladies and gentlemen?
We're going to take a break now. Up ahead, can the opposition coalition Isambayan pose a strong challenge to the administration's best in next year's polls? We'll tackle that with political analyst Professor Edna Cole when Dateline Philippines returns. Stay with us here on ANC. And we're back. You're still with Dateline Philippines. Here's another look at our headlines this noon. Several countries express concern over what they say is the incomplete data gathered by the World Health Next president. But if this current administration is to be beaten come 2022, the VP, if she decides to run for the presidency, must have with her a formidable slate. That's what Isambayan hopes to form. Question is the bench deep enough for new recruits? Joining us now, political analyst Professor Edna Cole. She's former dean of the National College of Public Administration and Governance of the University of the Philippines. Professor Cole, welcome to the program. Thanks for joining us today.
Thank you, Carmina. Good afternoon.
All right. Let's talk about Isambayan. When you visualize this slate that they're trying to form, what do you want to see for it to be formidable enough to win the people's trust? Because it's not just about winning the elections. It's really about getting the people's trust once again.
Well, actually, you have the key word there. The key adjective is really formidable. But formidable means formidable in many ways. I hear from Isambayan Coalition that this is a very strange and a very interesting formation or creature because it was initiated by non-conventional political parties or non-conventional political figures and political players. It is led by former constitutional officers such as Supreme Court Justice, former Ombudsman. So in that sense, it is something new and different. Mm. So, however, if they are endorsing indeed and inviting possible players and bets to join the coalition, the key really is to be able to understand the big words that the initiators of the coalition are trying to drop and to define. They began with constitutional right, promotion of human rights, the West Philippine Sea, anti-terrorism, and so on. But it has to stick to voters and be translated in such a way that it can really be politically communicated in a way that is understandable by the voters. And as you said, it has to be formidable. The communication, political communication, is important, I think. But equally important will be the followers and the parties and the personalities who can be drawn in into the coalition.
Yeah.
And I think they should be aware that the incumbent is a formidable force to contend.
So let's talk about those personalities now, Professor Ko. In reality, you know, when you talk about this coalition, will they have enough? Will it have enough recruits given the current political play when the president enjoys the support of the majority of elected officials?
Well, actually, it's difficult to tell at this time. We will have to observe and see what the coalition's efforts are to be able to draw in the interesting and the so-called popular and attractive political players that can bring in and translate the popularity really into votes. As of now, I think the coalition is drawing in more possible nominees, more possible political players into their fold. And so we will see how it goes. What are the names that can come up? What are the interesting and attractive, popular in the sense, no? Who can help build some more the power of the coalition? So I think it remains to be seen yet.
Yeah, and just going back to the point that you made about political communication, you know, when you really think about it, is it enough for them to just be considered the opposition? That's going to be the backbone of their communication? You're shaking your head. Tell me why.
Actually, saying the opposition terminology, slogans may not be sufficient. It has to sell. I mean, what are we opposing against? What are we, why are we supporting this new fold of, I mean, this new coalition? What makes it stick to voters, actually? I think it is not for the sake of opposition, but the coalition should be able to represent what really the voters want and aspire for, given a level of comparison maybe that voters can play and can put together side by side with what the incumbent offers.
So an anti-Duterte rhetoric, that won't cut it? That alone won't cut it?
That alone, it may, but not for all, perhaps. And I think that formidability of the incumbent has to be recognized. It is not sufficient that you are just an opposition. I mean, how do you sell yourselves? How do you see the voters appreciating you as the coalition, as the party, as the politician with the better option, with a more realistic call for really for a change? How is it different from the present one?
Yeah. In a way, when you talk about that, in the middle of this pandemic, you'd think it's easy, but it's really not. Because anyone can say they could be better. Anyone can say we're going to do it well. Because no one has had this experience in the past, Professor.
That's right. I think if ever there is a particular issue that people will assess and will look up to in the coming 2022 election, it is the pandemic. How well has the action to fight, to combat, and to reduce the sufferings of people during the pandemic take place? I mean, what was done? I think this is a point of reckoning in a way. A point of reckoning, who did well? Did the current administration do enough? did enough, probably. I mean, it is difficult, but I should say that the pandemic is going to be a very turning point for people to make decision as well. They will remember this as a point of reference of choices in lives and choices of politicians.
So in a way, when you look at it, Vice President Leni Robredo is in a good position because she is also doing her part in this pandemic, doing with whatever she can with the meager resources that she has. Like right now, she has this swab testing going on, a mobile testing, targeted testing that they're doing. But then again, we haven't heard from her. If she's going to, you know, throw her hat into the ring and really declare once and for all that she's going to run, should this be the time for the vice president to declare? Should she even decline? What do you think?
Well, actually, in the end, it's the final decision of VP Leni Robredo. It's her decision whether to consider the offer of the coalition, even if she looks like. It looks like that the coalition's pet candidate is really the vice president. But I would say from the point of view of someone looking at the VP, the question is, but how many people have heard of what she's doing? And how many people have really felt? It's 10%, 15%, would this be enough to turn the tide in her favor? Again, there is a critical point here of having been known, having been heard, having been felt by so many people as possible, but she does not have that edge. She may have the determination, but as we can see, it's the people that probably have benefited from it. And I would imagine that those are still few. So I think she probably is honest in saying that she has not considered the offer of the coalition at this point. And let's leave it to her.
Yeah.
But what we're saying here is there are many things to consider when one decides to come into the political bandwagon. But, let's see how things unfold. In the meantime, people should start looking at which direction already. Who are the people who could help, who could respond first to the pandemic? And I think we should lay the information open for wider scrutiny by people to be known.
Yeah, so let's talk about the pandemic now. You said it's going to play a very crucial role in the run-up to the 2020 elections. But it also can be political suicide for those who would invoke it now, right? Use the pandemic now to gain that electoral victory.
I think people are, or some portion of our countrymen, some portion of the population already feel that the pandemic is indeed a political tool. It's being used also to help boost popularity. It's also being used as a tool for, expanding their name and their popularity. And in fact, I have heard some people already name names on who is using the pandemic, in fact, for 2022. Still, the voters' information should be sufficient, and they should keep their eyes open. Who sincerely help, and who are using this for popularity's sake?
You know, when you talk about Isambayan, it's not the first coalition that we've ever seen, right? There've been many coalitions promising whatever it is that they can promise at that point in our nation's history. But let's talk about the lessons from the past and the way forward. What issues must this coalition address? And also, should they be very careful not to sort of present themselves as thinking for the public?
Well, actually, my concern, I'm torn between this particular coalition in the sense that I'm pleased that there are non-conventional political players leading the coalition. Mm-hmm. And I know that they are exerting efforts to get more people behind them, mm-hmm. More nominees probably to align and to support them, which is a good effort, I guess. But also, if the call of the coalition becomes too cerebral, meaning it's all high up there, constitutional right, human right, without translating this in a language that is felt, understood, popular among the bigger number of our voters, they may get stuck up. And I think they need that intelligence to be able to translate the dreams and the big words and the vision into popular ones. And this is where the challenge for connecting the dream and the vision to doable, to realities, and to what people would really expect, the ordinary citizens, the ordinary voters could see.
But here's the thing, though, Professor. I'm sorry to cut you there because we're running out of time. But here's the thing. Before they can even connect to the voters, they have to connect within and among themselves. I mean, you're talking about a broad coalition here from different persuasions. There's been a lot said between and among those who are going to be forming this coalition. And when you hear former Supreme Court Justice Antonio Carpio said that without unity, they will not succeed, what will it take for this unity to happen, do you think?
I think the Philippine 2022 election would need lesser candidates to choose from. I think they should be able to recognize that there are very strong contenders who will really make the difference and between whom people will make choice. It's very dangerous if there are so many factions and other options, because the more that opposition and candidates divide, the bigger chance that they lose, the bigger chance for the incumbent to really win. I mean, I think that's the difficulty of having more people, pluralized candidates, nominees, but they cannot identify, but voters cannot identify with what they want. Mm. So it is not just an opposition. It has to be a broader, a bigger opposition. If the opposition wants to stand up the bigger chance against the incumbent.
All right, we're going to have to leave it at that. Professor Edna Ko, she is, of course, a former dean of the National College of Public Administration and Governance of the University of the Philippines. Professor, nice to talk to you. You keep safe. Thanks for joining us today.
Thank you, Carmina. Thanks for having me.
Take care. Back in the newsroom, foreign ministers from four Southeast Asian countries, that's including the Philippines, will embark on a three-day visit to China beginning today. The visit comes as Beijing and the Association of Southeast Asian Nations mark the 30th anniversary of China-ASEAN relations. It also comes amid continuing tensions over the presence of Chinese vessels in the West Philippine Sea. On Tuesday, the Philippine military conducted a maritime patrol in the Julian Felipe Reef, where close to 200 Chinese vessels have been staying. The military plane's approach triggered a warning from the Chinese military.
This is Chinese Shiguan Reef. You are approaching a Chinese reef. To avoid enemy and move that may cause me not standing. Please leave immediately.
This is Government Philippine Aircraft, Charlie 295. We are conducting routine maritime patrol over Philippine Easy. And we are proceeding based on our planned route. Over.
China finalizes a sweeping overhaul of Hong Kong's electoral system. The changes would see the number of directly elected representatives fall and the number of Beijing-approved officials rise in an expanded legislature. As part of this shakeup, a powerful new vetting committee will monitor candidates for public office. It will also work with national security authorities to ensure they are loyal to Beijing. The measures are part of China's efforts to consolidate its grip over the city following the imposition of a national security law in June.
Basically, it returns Hong Kong back to 1997 or before 1997. Those election reforms that is made in the past 20 odd years were all gone, and that is not good for Hong Kong, because in the past we know that the major problems that we are facing is not just about housing or not just about whether or not the young people can get the social mobility. It is about whether the system can actually reflect what Hong Kong people think.
Let's get an update now on the maritime patrol conducted by the Philippine military over the West Philippine Sea. Shara Zambrano now joins us from the AFP's Western Command in Puerto Princesa in Palawan. Shara, I was just reading your post on social media. You said that you've flown over some of the artificial islands of China when they were still being built, and you were able to fly over them now and you saw them. And it was, the experience was both chilling and sobering. Tell us more about your experience, Shara.
Yes, as I said in my post, I mean, it's one thing to see it in satellite photos provided by think tanks or the available websites on the net, but it's a whole other thing to be on a plane above it, knowing full well that you are within the 200 nautical mile exclusive economic zone of the Philippines. It's a stark contrast to the condition of the islands that we ourselves, the Philippine side, has established. We do know, and we have seen islands like Pag-asa, which has our only civilian community in the West Philippine Sea. These are made of practically one-story buildings and a couple of schoolhouses and homes. We of course have a human shore, which we know is made up of that old decrepit ship that we ran aground in order to provide a base for Philippine troops. And knowing that, and then seeing those large Chinese artificial islands, it is enough to send chills up your spine. You can see the multi-story buildings that they have, the watchtowers, the radars, the runways, and we have measured this, and the largest island that we have, Pag-asa Island, is small enough to, you know, to sit on one of these islands without notice. And of course, the airstrip in Pag-asa Island is much shorter and much cruder compared to these artificial islands of China. And the thing is, we did go to the West Philippine Sea initially to check on the Julian Felipe Reef, which we know and we have seen to have been bombarded by much Chinese presence. We've seen the stack, the phalanx of similar-looking vessels all tied up together in a neat row, which authorities have identified as Chinese militia, and which, of course, the Chinese...
Shara? Okay, we lost her there. Our correspondent, Shara Zambrano, was giving us details about, you know, what they saw, what she saw as they flew over initially just to check on the Julian Felipe Reef. But as Shara Zambrano did say in her post, to see all these artificial islands now being completed is both chilling and sobering. We'll have more of Shara Zambrano's reports in our succeeding newscast. In the meantime, we move on with the rest of the news this noon. In business, the Philippine Central Bank sees March inflation settling within the 4.25% range. The BSP says the downward adjustment in power rates as well as lower prices of key food items are the main sources of lower inflation during the month. But it says those factors could be partly offset by higher oil prices and the peso's depreciation. The BSP adds it will continue to monitor evolving economic and financial conditions to ensure that the monetary policy remains consistent with the central bank's price stability mandate. In February, inflation hit an over two-year high of 4.7%, driven by higher prices of pork. The March inflation print is due out next week. In sports, the Charlotte Hornets soared past the Washington Wizards, 114-104. Terry Rozier lit up the Wizards for 27 points, while Gordon Hayward added 26 and 11 rebounds. Charlotte took control with a 16-2 run in the second quarter. Russell Westbrook had his 11th, make that 17th triple-double of the season, but he couldn't prevent the Wizards from falling to 17 and 29 on the season. And that'll do it for today. Thank you for joining us. I'm Carmina Constantino. If you want to revisit today's episode, Dateline Philippines podcast is on Spotify and Apple Podcasts. Play back this newscast too on ANC's YouTube channel and on ANC 24/7 on Facebook. Keep safe. Keep it here on ANC.